Good morning, and thanks for joining us today for the Wednesday edition of The Morning Show. It is Wednesday, October 30th, 2019, and we're broadcasting from the studios of 88.5 KRFY in downtown Sandpoint. And I'm Susie Prez, one of your hosts this morning.
And I'm your co-host over here, Chris Bessler. Good morning, Susie. How you doing?
Good morning, Chris. I'm fine. I made it here dressed in my warmest clothes ever.
Ever?
Well, yeah, I had many,
better
many
save
layers.
A little bit, because it's going to actually get colder.
Really?
Yeah, you will, yes, I promise.
Okay. So I will take that into consideration.
Yeah. But we have a great show for you listeners today. We are continuing our series on the election, and today we're going to be talking about the Lake Pendre School District. There are a couple important things going to be on the ballot concerning that. We're going to be talking about the proposal for the continuing levy with Superintendent Tom Allerton. Tom, thanks for being here.
Yeah, thanks, Chris. Thanks, Susie.
And the district CFO, Lisa Halls. Lisa, thank you for making it.
Good morning. Thank you.
Yeah, and then that's going to be the first part of the show. And then the second part of the show, we're going to be talking about the one seat that's up for election that's contested. It's Zone 4. That's with Geraldine Lewis and Tara Tribbett, and both of them have been invited to attend. We know that Geraldine's going to be here. We're not sure about Tara. We'll see if she gets here. That part won't air for about 20 minutes, so she could still come in.
You know, Chris, I know you have the information about voting, but I don't think we can say it too often. What is that information? How do you know where to go to vote? Find out if you've registered, things like that.
Well, the Bonner County Elections Office is the official place to get that information. They're in the federal building on Highway 2. And actually, early voting is underway right now up through Friday. So you can go into the elections office at the county building and vote today. They're open from 9 to 5 p.m. each day till Friday. Then after Friday, you have to wait to vote till actually election day, which is next Tuesday, November 5th. And you vote at your regular polling place on November 5th. So wherever you voted last time, you'd be voting this time. If you're not sure where that's at, there's a ton of information on the Sandpoint Online Election Central page, and it gives a lot of links where you could check and see where you vote. There's a tool that the state provides that will, you put your address in, and it tells you exactly where your polling place is. Of course, you can also call the county, Bonner County, ask to speak to the elections office, and they can tell you that as well. So hopefully everybody gets, and by the way, if you're not registered to vote, but you've lived in Idaho for at least 30 days, you can register to vote at the polls. So you're not out of the picture if you haven't registered yet.
And what do you need to bring to those voting places to register if it's the day of?
You need to bring ID, the proper ID, and an Idaho driver's license would be probably the best, as well as proof of where you your residence, like a utility bill or something like that. Again, the thing to do is check with the county, Bonner County Elections Office.
There you go. We're going to be repeating that occasionally up until November 5th voting day. So we want to encourage folks. This is Local Decision 2019. Chris and I have been doing this every Wednesday morning for a while here. And on next Wednesday, the day after voting, what are we going to be doing, Chris?
We're going to be talking with a couple of journalists and kind of dissecting what happened the night before. And the candidates that won and the ballot measures that won or lost. So tune into that and get the, you know, see a little interpretation of what the voters said.
The deep analysis of the results. And that will be fun. That's always kind of fun. I was talking to one of the print journalists and they said, oh boy, that's because they stay up all night finding out what happened. Mm-hmm. And then they come over here and talk to us on the radio. Mm-hmm. So I guess we should move on to the National Weather Service forecast. And it is cold out. It's 14 degrees out right now. And today we can expect a high of 37 and sunny. They're beautiful days, I have to say. And tonight, partly cloudy, a low of 13. Then it kind of starts warming up just a little bit. Thursday, high 42. Friday, high 46. And Saturday, high of 48. So a little bit of that fall weather back.
Yeah. Yeah, that's actually kind of classic fall weather for around here. Right. And, of course, tomorrow is Halloween. That's probably the big event on the events calendar. And if you have little trick-or-treaters, there's some cool things going on around town. There's trick-or-treating at City Hall. This is all tomorrow, Thursday. There's a trick-or-treating event at the museum. There's a Halloween warm-up station at Christ our Redeemer Church where you could go and hang out by a fire as you tour that neighborhood. There's haunted houses and all kinds of stuff. You can check out that on the community calendar. It's on our website, krfy.org, or on the samplingonline.com website.
Good idea. I want to alert our listeners that we have an extra interview that we will be broadcasting at 9 o'clock this morning, right after Bird Note. Yesterday's interview was really great because this is Bat Week. If you didn't know that, well, you know it now. And the guest yesterday talked about bats. Their biologist from the Forest Service, Diane Propsko, and Bureau of Land Management biologist, Carrie Hugo. And the reason we're rebroadcasting it is because our broadcast was down. You could stream us, but you couldn't hear us over the radio yesterday. And this was such a great interview. We're just going to rebroadcast the interview with them and find out all about bats. So at 9 o'clock, stay with us. And I do have a Sandpoint City Minute.
Okay, give us that. And then we'll get into today's agenda here.
So downtown, we're almost there with the being done with phase one because the parking lines are on First Avenue. I noticed this morning, I'm not sure that the streets are open yet, but they did put down the black top and the stripes are on for the parking. So stay tuned, watch for that, and support local businesses downtown, folks. Also, just a reminder of the four-way stops, because I come up to those four-way stops and people are still going right straight on through them. So not only go slow and be aware that some people might not notice the stop signs are four-way now on Division and Pine, Church and Fourth, and Cedar and Third. Those are the ones I know of.
Yeah, and some new four-way stops, so, you know, watch for those.
Right, and the city of Sandpoint's doing all kinds of great stuff. They have a wonderful website at sandpointidaho.gov.
Okay, and with that, let's get into today's topic. Again, we have with us Superintendent of Schools Tom Albertson and CFO Lisa Halls. Thanks, both of you, for being here. And the subject now we want to talk about is the continuing levy. This is a ballot measure that voters will see on the ballot on Tuesday. And to kind of sum it up real quickly, you know, this is extend the levy that was already approved by voters last March as a, what they quote, indefinite term levy. That means it won't require another vote every 2 years as we've done for the past 20 years. So with that little bit of introduction, Tom, why don't you tell us more about what this is and what the intent is?
Yeah, the intent is, a lot of citizens said, why are we coming back with a levy, maintenance and operation levy, every 18 months, actually, when we're starting the campaign to get that to the citizens? And actually, at the state level, the law says that for this supplemental levy or maintenance and operation levy, you could ask the voters every year, every 2 years, or you can make it continuous if it's at least been in place 7 years and over 20% of your budget. So at this point in time, the energy, the time, many citizens have asked, could we make this continuous so that we're not going through this process every 2 years? And so really that's what we're looking at. Also want to emphasize that this is a flat dollar amount. This is the $12.7 million, Chris, as you mentioned, was already previously approved last March. So this is not an increase in tax. This is not a new tax. This would just be continuing this flat dollar amount. And, you know, as we know, this could not be increased, cannot be increased without future voter approval. And I think that's important, but could be decreased just by a 3-2 vote by the school board. Mm. And I think those are important facts that people need to know.
Yeah, and the idea that it might be decreased, really that goes back to the kind of the hope, I think, that a lot of people have that the legislature will come up with a different funding formula. rather than one that's placing this burden on local taxpayers, local property owners, the way it is. And Lisa, why don't you tell us, the levy has become a big chunk of the budget, about 35% of all the funds that the district gets. So how did we get to this place where the something that's supposed to be a supplemental levies become so important to the entire budget?
Well, you're correct, Chris. We have, the district has about a $40 million annual budget, and our maintenance and operation levy represents about 35% of the annual revenue currently. Piece of history that's important. There are a couple of conflated factors that have brought not only Lake Ponderay School District, but the majority of school districts, 93 of 115 that have taxing authority, have this type of levy in place. Currently, it's absolutely a funding norm. In 2006-07, the Idaho legislature fundamentally changed how public school districts are funded. Antecedent to that, there was something called equalization in place. And equalization meant there was a non-voter approved component of property taxes as part of the state's funding formula. And that was repealed, and the state increased, or the legislature increased, the sales tax from 5% to 6% then. And the increase in sales tax was meant to replace the non-voter approved property tax component. But the revenue generated through the new sales tax, 1%, did not meet that threshold. So that's the first factor. The second factor is, right after that, the recession kicked in, and the apex of that was in 2009. And the state drastically cut, you know, all agency budgets. Agency budgets are health and welfare, the jails, the public school districts, and the public school districts represent the largest annual appropriation of the state's budget. So between the repeal of equalization and really drastic cuts to the K-12 annual state appropriation, school districts became more and more reliant for funding operations through these supplemental levies. And we are, we fall in that category as well.
Mm-hmm. So there is, I understand it, is there's not a mechanism for the money you receive on the local property taxes via the levy that's in place without a supplemental levy for that to increase?
That's correct. So public school districts in Idaho, through their voter-approved property tax measures, it's a flat dollar amount that's being levied. So that's separate and distinct from every other taxing district in Idaho. Every other taxing district, the counties, the municipalities, the highway districts, the library districts, they levy property taxes through a non-voter approved component. And then every fiscal year they can levy, by law, 3% more. So there's a 3%, I'm not going to say escalator, but I don't know what the right term is. And that's just simply not the case for public school districts. So this ballot measure says Lake Ponderay School District would be authorized to levy up to $12,700,000 annually. And as Tom mentioned in his opening comment, it's a flat dollar amount. There's no escalator. The only way that could be increased is to go back to the voters for approval for some kind of increase.
Give us a perspective on, you know, what's our tax burden devoted to schools compared to other parts of the state, other districts?
Well, all taxing entities levy property taxes through the county the first week in September. And then the counties review those, and then they send them to the Idaho State Tax Commission, where they're certified no later than October 31st annually. So that's tomorrow. So the Idaho State Tax Commission for this year has not certified the levies. So I can't speak currently. I can speak to last year, where our tax rate was literally half of what the average Idaho taxpayer is paying towards supporting their public school district. And that's a direct result of our district having a lot of property tax value within the boundaries of the district. Last year, we were the sixth wealthiest valued district in the state, not the sixth largest by student count, but wealthiest. And this helps keep our tax rate lower. Also, I would mention that the average Idahoan pays 30% of their annual property taxes towards supporting their public school district. And historically, that's a very sort of constant average. For the taxpayers within the boundaries of our school district, that percentage has been 20%. So if someone is thinking they are paying considerably more in property taxes to support Lake Pungare School District, the factual answer is, well, no, last year actually their tax rate was half, and they're paying 10% less than the average Idaho to support public education.
Okay, yeah, thanks for that. So, Tom, the levy comprises now about 35% of the budget, over a third of the budget. And the idea, as I understand, is to stabilize this funding source so there's not a vote that comes up every couple years. What happens if one of these levies were to fail?
Well, the school district, as we know it today, does not operate without 35% of the budget. What's currently on that is a third of staffing, so it'd be drastic staff cuts. We do support rural schools through this. We are a unique geographical, comprised school district in the sense that we keep our small rural schools open, which I'm in favor of. I like that. And I think a lot of constituents have talked about that they really like their students going to their neighborhood schools, the South Sides, the Sagals, the Hope, the North Side, the Clark Forks. Those schools are important to those communities. So I look at it as this vote is to help stabilize the funding to keep those schools open. I don't want to have the conversation of consolidation or looking at what we would do if we were to cut. When we look at spending money at the Lake Pendere School District, we always say, how is this going to impact the students in the classroom? And that's really a great guiding question there. Outside of that, the extension of the classroom is extracurricular activities. And yes, we're academically, we really, that's the focus of what we want in our student learning, but it is important for that extension for extracurricular activities, and people are passionate about that. And 100% of extracurricular activities, the main parts of the safety, the equipment, the coaching salaries are on that levy. So there's a lot there, let alone our curriculum materials, our technology budget. All of that is within the 35% of the budget.
So one of the things that I see folks that are questioning this ballot measure asking about is, what about accountability? The fact that we have a levy every 2 years holds the district accountable. What would you say about that? Are there other measures of accountability here that the district employs?
Yeah, I think the process of setting the budget would not change, cannot change by law. The annual budget, whether or not you vote every 2 years, every 1 year, or on a continuous level, that budget has to be set in an open meeting with public input. And let alone, I just went through for the first time as superintendent the external audit process. And by law, there needs to be an external audit on all expenditures. So again, we just went through that process, and it was great for me to gather that information. I mean, truly, the external auditor is external. A quote was, their job is not to make the school district look good, but to let us know of our checks and balances and where we are on our financial standing and practices. And I'm just happy to say, and thank you to Lisa and her team, that we got a clean audit with no findings. And it was, again, very transparent. All expenditures are also in the budget, is online. You can look at every dollar that has been spent. So really, there's a lot of accountability there. In addition to that, we got academic accountabilities. You know, idahoschools.org has where the measures are for the whole school district. And so there's accountability in the product that's being produced with the taxpayers' dollar also. So we have that accountability. And then I've even had this conversation that there's even accountability in your representation. Every citizen is represented by a school board member in their zone. Become active and communicate with that school board member that is your representative, and there's another accountability measure.
Mm-hmm. Chris, well, can I augment something Tom said? Our school district historically has had this type of maintenance and operation levy in place for 20 consecutive years since it's been a school district. And it is not required by Idaho law that a school district account for separately their supplemental levy, property tax collections, and how they're spent. However, historically, our school district has done just that. So you will see in the annual budgeting process, and then again in the annual required by law external audit, that all property taxes collected through a maintenance and operations supplemental levy are separated out, and all of the expenses against those property tax collections are identified down to the cent. So any point in time historically and then prospectively, if this ballot measure were to prevail, that practice would continue so that a taxpayer would know, and I do mean exactly, how those property tax dollars are being spent.
A lot of transparency is what you're saying. It's all there. A question would be, since a third of the budget for the public school comes from this supplemental levy, do you envision a permanent levy changing the staff retention, the staff that are part of that third, morale even? What do you think that will do to our teachers, your staffing?
It's important to me that the citizens in this community trust the school district. And trust is a really important word. And I know that it can be thrown around fairly loosely. But we work really hard to be accountable, to show growth, and to provide opportunities. I mean, don't want to use the word business as much, but we're in the business of guiding young minds to adulthood. And at this point in time is, if we're not using our time and energy and resources every 18 months, coming back to the voters, absolutely it allows teaching staff, administrative staff, to focus on just that, providing that opportunity, focus on the teaching and learning of students, guiding them to being productive citizens.
Susie, you hit on a good point on morale, and I don't think it's singular to Lake Ponderay School District's morale. I think it also applies in a greater sense to our community's morale. Lake Ponderay School District is the largest employer in Bonner County, and most of the people residing in the boundaries of our school district, you know, don't have students in our district. But if they think that, the financial soundness of Lake Ponderay School District has nothing to do with their sort of morale and community well-being, I would argue that that's not the case. They probably have the expectation of picking up the phone to EMS, driving on safe roads, having access to quality health care, and all of those pivot on a strong financial community. So for every one Lake Ponderay School District job that helps support three service jobs within the community. And so the morale of the entire community, the whole stability of the entire community really does pivot largely on the financial stability of Lake Ponderay School District.
A permanent levy, it sounds like, takes away the question of if the levy passes and allows people to move on with their lives and keep looking at being here as a permanent decision. Mm-hmm. Also, and just a second question. How many school districts are in that, I think you said 35% that can have a permanent levy that are funded by levies of 35% of their budget? How many school districts have moved over to a permanent levy that you know of, if you know that?
I do know that. Last year, there were five school districts that have an indefinite term levy. They are the Boise School District, the Lewiston School District, the Moscow School District, the Blaine County School District, and
Mullen.
And Mullen is most recent in 2016. The four others have actually had this type of levy in place for decades.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, we're about out of time for this part of our show here. And again, this will be on the ballot November 5th, or you could go vote early right now. You vote your regular polling place. And I think, you know, you guys can't say yes or no on anything that you're advocating, but I guess the message would be please vote.
Definitely.
Yeah, I mean, that's the important thing. And any concluding remarks, Tom, you'd like to put in?
Yeah, I'll just go back to that. I'm proud of Lake Ponderay School District and all the hardworking employees from picking the students up in the morning, getting them to school safe, keeping them fed, and, you know, the hard work, the community of learners that each teacher basically creates in the classroom. That's the real work of the school district, as I said, is the importance is providing the opportunities for young minds to find their way to be productive citizens. And to me, that's our goal. And I think we do a great job of that.
Well, thank you both, Lisa Halls, CFO, and Tom Albertson, superintendent of the Lake Ponderay School District, for telling us all about the permanent levy that will be on the ballot. And we're going to take a quick music break. This is 88.5 KRFY, and you're listening to The Morning Show on this beautiful Wednesday morning. And this is Elisa Hall's choice of songs, It's Queen, We Will Rock You. And we'll be right back. And who will be back in the studio with us?
We'll be back here with Geraldine Lewis. She's the trustee for Zone 4. She's standing for re-election. And possibly Tara Tribbett. She's opposed by Tara Tribbett. So both are invited, and we'll be back in just a moment.
Okay, this is Queen, We Will Rock You. Stay with us. And that was Queen, We Will Rock You, and we're back here live in the studios of 88.5 KRFY. This is The Morning Show, and we now have with us Geraldine Lewis. She's the one of the candidates for District 4 Lake Ponderay School trustee positions.
Hello.
Good morning, Geraldine. Thank you for being here.
Geraldine, thank you for being here. And I'll back up just a little bit. So what voters will see on the ballot actually are two races. In Zone 1, however, which covers Clark Fork, Hope, and Eastern Bonner County, the incumbent Pearly Decker is unopposed, but he theoretically will be on the ballot. In Zone 4, which is what we're talking about right now, that's the Sagal area and portions of Ponderay, and Geraldine, who's with us, thank you, mm-hmm. Geraldine Lewis,
yeah.
Is opposed by Tara Tribbett. Tara was invited, but she's not here, so she's not going to apparently be here to tell her about herself. But with that, let's just give you a couple minutes of open mic time here, Geraldine. And if you can, to tell us about yourself and your background, introduce yourself to the listeners.
Sure. Thank you. I'm honored that you asked me here today. You know, my husband and I have been here. Well, he's a native of Sandpoint. And we came back here after we got married to raise our four kids here and have been completely pleased with that decision the entire time. Our kids all went through school here, Sagal Elementary, Sandpoint Middle School, and Sandpoint High School. And we're happy that right now they've all finished college, and Jim and I are empty nesting, as it were. And this is a great community. Our kids got excellent educations here. I got involved while they were in school as a volunteer in the schools, and then I've also been part of the board for Panhandle Alliance for Education. And my husband and I both see firsthand the importance of the community being engaged in education and really actively supporting and involving themselves in education in our community. So that's how I ended up becoming a trustee 4.5 years ago. Right now, as the longest standing trustee on our board, I decided to run again to kind of bring some continuity and a historical perspective for the district going forward. We've accomplished a lot of important things in the past 4.5 years, and I'm excited to see that work continue under new leadership with our superintendent, Tom Albertson, who you just heard from. It's a great phase for our district. I'm excited on where it's heading. You know, just to sum up, one of the things that happened in the last several years is that development of a long-range plan. And we came up with strategic priority areas. The community was involved in that conversation. All the administrators and educators were. And really going forward, those five areas kind of encapsulate where our focus is and what we hope to accomplish going forward. And I'm just very positive about all of that. So,
Right. Well, thank you. So what would you say are the top, few issues for you that are facing our school district right now?
One of the top issues is funding, but you've just spent a half an hour going over that. And the first priority area, obviously, is academic success. Everything we do is focused on offering an excellent education for students. So that's our primary goal. And I am very pleased that we get reports from our superintendent on metrics, on academic measurements, if you will. And those range from, the IRI, the reading indicator, the SATs, all of the metrics in English and math. I think that if we stay on top of setting high goals for our students and helping make sure that those students are moving forward, meeting their targets, then we are accomplishing what we hope to academically. That kind of loops around to one of the other priority areas for our district, which is recruit and retain excellent staff. I think the key to academic success is having really talented, motivated, and energized people in the classroom. Our teachers are excellent. We're very proud of the staff here in this district. And I know that having a plan in place to recruit and retain is important. We want to make sure, with this past levy that was in March of this year, that the teachers are paid an adequate, competitive salary, that they want to stay here and they know they're valued. So that's a high priority, and it feeds straight into that piece of academic success. You want more?
No.
I can give you more.
you did mention we'd been talking about funding earlier in the earlier segment, but and at that point we were talking about the proposed continuing levy that'll be on the ballot.
Yeah.
Do you support or oppose the continuing levy?
Well, as a trustee, I was all in favor of having this become a ballot issue. We've been hearing in the community that they want the chance to vote on this. An opportunity to say, hey, we realize the vitality of this funding and how integral it is to our whole public school system. When people really understand the issue that this is just a piece of our budget that is critical, many of them want the chance to say, let's make it permanent. Let's, get to the spot where we're all in agreement. This is an essential piece of our budget. And I think a lot of our community, I keep having conversations, people don't realize that nationwide, you know, there's a portion of a public school funding that comes federally. It's not a huge portion. But nationwide, there's a state portion and a local portion. And that's not unique to Idaho, that local citizens are asked to support public school. It's every state. We actually have an obligation as local citizens to step forward and do our piece. It is not unique to Idaho or even North Idaho. It's just the standard. I think one of the things in Idaho is that our citizens, our voters, really respect the right to make their own decisions and to control how those dollars are spent. When we put this ballot measure together, it's for that exact reason. You have the right as a voter to go and say, hey, I trust this district. I like what's happening here. I want my tax dollars to do this piece. We're not getting that imposed on us from the state level. They're saying your voters make that decision. And that's a powerful thing. I think everybody should get to the polls and, you know, exercise their right to have a voice in this. So...
Well, one of the things that we asked earlier, Superintendent Albertson, I'll pose to you as well, and that's, you know, one of the largest arguments I'm seeing against the continuing levy is the question of accountability.
Sure.
That might reduce the accountability of the district to the voters about how money is spent. And you're a piece of the accountability because people
trustees
elect you to go there and represent their interests. What would your answer be on that accountability question?
Well, there's several pieces. First off, we're required both federally and at the state level to do an entire accounting of how the money is spent. And that does happen. Our CFO, Lisa Halls, who you also have heard from, is extremely thorough in that sense. Every penny is accounted for and in the proper account where it's been designated to be spent. The thing our district does above and beyond is we report on a level that's even beyond what the state or federal requires. So any citizen here, any constituent who wants to go to the district website can see exactly where those levy dollars are being spent. Every account can be drilled down. But even more so, there's been an open door policy in this district. I know for a fact that Lisa Halls and Superintendent Tom Woodward have never turned anyone away and said, I just don't have time to talk to you. The door is open. They encourage those kind of conversations for the people who really want to get more detailed budget information. Mm-hmm. So that I feel that we have taken transparency to, you know, the nth degree. We're really going above and beyond to make sure the community knows where the dollars are being spent.
Okay, here's another funding question for you.
Okay.
And it's the hard one.
Okay.
In 2016, the school district proposed a plant facility levy of $55 million.
Sure.
With some real specific things like rebuild the Sandpoint Middle School and the Northside School and most of Washington School and address a whole bunch of maintenance needs. That levy went down in flames. 65%
sure.
voted against it, even though they've been voting for this supplemental levy for 20 years. So it brings that question back. And, you know, how is the district going to deal with this big looming issue of replacement and repair
sure.
of our schools?
It's a great conversation to have. I think even those voters who understood, hey, we need to handle facility issues. Our schools are getting older. They are aging. Even those voters in that election in 2016 felt that it was too much in one fell swoop. And I understand that. And in hindsight, we've learned a lot from that. We do have a conversation about what will be our long-range plan. Can we tackle these facility needs in smaller pieces rather than one large, you know, all in vote. I think that when the conversation comes back around and we highlight which is the first facility piece that needs to be addressed, we'll be able to have community conversations where people can get on board with it piece by piece rather than all in one package. That's the message I heard back from voters after that election. And you're right, it failed dismally. But even people who were on board with supporting facilities said, yeah, it's just, I just can't see it all as one package. I need to see it in smaller pieces. Now, as saying that, the trustees have not had a conversation specifically about how to move forward. So I'm just giving you gut instinct on what I've heard in the community and what I believe our trustee direction is headed. We haven't got a firm plan. We have discussed that there needs to be a long-range plan. We do put money aside each year in our budget. It's not going to be large enough to handle some of the bigger issues. So we will need to come back in front of voters at some point with facility needs, but we've learned from that 2016 election.
I suspect that conversation is going to be on the agenda coming up very soon of how to proceed with it.
Yeah, eventually we will have this harder conversation. Yes.
So another subject, to bring down costs, if needed, would you support closing rural schools such as Clark Fork, Northside, or Southside? Would you support larger class sizes? Would you support saving money on extracurricular activities, including athletics, by charging fees to participate, such as another option? What is your thoughts on some of that?
Right. So each of those things you've mentioned are things that I would hate ever see come to pass. I mean, everyone in this community knows the values of these 12 schools we have. Our community has rallied behind keeping schools open. They care about those individual communities that the schools help vitalize. Anytime a conversation has come up, the community says, we want these schools. They matter to us. So, yeah, it is more expensive to keep smaller rural schools open, but I don't believe that the voters will ever put us in a position where we have to consolidate schools. That's just my pie in the sky feeling. I don't feel we'll have to go that route. I do know that these constituents here care about that very issue. You know, every time we've passed a supplemental levy, operations and management levy, we know what's at stake. Those extracurricular, we don't want to have to pay for those. We don't want it to be a barrier to any student to be able to participate in extracurricular activities. Those CTE classes we have, the AP classes we have, the opportunity to have training and development for our teachers. Those are all pieces of this levy, and I know that's why it passes every year. The voters care about those same things and want to see them happen. As far as this indefinite term election, I hope they realize that these matter so much that they should continuously be a piece of our budget and not at risk every 2 years. Because there are very few people I talk to who say, yes, you know, scrap the extra programs, let's pay our teachers less, and let's consolidate schools. Never do I get that feedback. So I hope that at election time, people come forward and vote with what they care most about. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, it's a question. Even the folks that have said they might oppose the continuing levy say, well, they don't want to close the schools. Well, the question would be, well, how are you going to cover that shortfall should it ever occur?
Right. There's a disconnect there when people are really critical of the spending and the levy, and then they turn around and say, oh, no, don't close the small schools. Well, then vote that way.
Yeah, something's got to go if it ever comes to that. Let's turn to a different subject now. So how do you feel the district's curriculum is, and would you seek any changes in the teaching curriculum?
So a curriculum piece is never a done deal. It's evolving constantly. And if you are a proactive administration and district, which ours is, you're always looking down the road at, okay, what's the next piece of curriculum that needs to be updated or renewed. Right now, you know, we're working on some of the STEM curriculum, the science curriculum. there's always a piece of curriculum that is going to need an investment of dollars. And what comes along with curriculum is the training and the teacher development that goes along with it. And that can't be ignored, so that your teachers are up to date on any new curriculum and any new standards that need to be addressed in the classroom. So I think all of those things are part of what our budget needs are as we look out as a board, as our superintendent and our director of teaching and learning, Andrew Murray. They look at those pieces and they incorporate it into the budget. It's also actually a piece of our supplemental levy also. So those are never things where you can sit back and say, hey, we're done. We don't need to look at curriculum anymore. We're constantly evaluating it.
And speaking of curriculum, you kind of answered my question, sort of. Who really does look at the trends and the new thoughts and what's working, what's not working? Mm-hmm. It sounds like the curriculum administrator you mentioned. And right. How does the trustees interact with those decisions? Is it just
it's strictly budget? It's a good question. Mm-hmm. So we rely on the superintendent and Andrew Murray, the director of teaching and learning, to really stay on top of those sorts of academic curriculum decisions. And I mean, frankly, the question was raised last night, why do you even need administration? Well, for that very reason, they pull those pieces of curriculum together so that as a student moves through middle school in or through elementary into middle school, into high school, that their curriculum is all following along and all the needs are being met and that the curriculum matches up and moves them forward. So we really rely strongly on that administrative piece to give us a sense of these are the right next steps in curriculum, but also, yeah, these are the pieces you're going to need in your budget. Because as you said, even though the Board of Trustees doesn't involve themselves down in the classroom or in the schools in a day-to-day way, our oversight of the budget is the piece where we approve those sorts of decisions.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of curriculum, a little sidelight here, what do you see as the role of technology as part of the curriculum or part of what kids need to be learning now?
Right. Obviously, technology is a huge piece of, it's just so integrated into how we educate, how we operate our businesses, how we function in our world today. To even have the conversation of separating the two is a little bit farcical. It doesn't make any sense. As far as our technology budget, I've been very impressed with our head of technology, Matt Brass. He definitely manages to come forward within a budget that he's able to see, stays remarkably within, and still keep us up and current with all our needs in the classrooms. I mean, it's been impressive to be able to go, you know, one-to-one with our students going down even into the elementary grades. And to be able to support that technology in each school, it's a huge task, and he manages to do it with a really responsible budget. It's one that always has to be part of our budget going forward. Technology support, all of it.
Here's kind of a philosophical question for you. What, if anything, should our schools do about teaching values? And by that I mean, should the district be teaching about family life or sex education or AIDS or gay and LGBTQ issues? How should those sorts of things be handled by the school district?
Well, there are some values that are just universal. You know, good citizenship, being a person who is a responsible member of their community. There's certain values and character that can be taught in the schools easily. Some of the other issues really relate to a family's lifestyle and what they might choose or what they might have religious inclinations toward. And we have to be very careful that our curriculum doesn't step on those sorts of issues. Those are better handled within the home. Those students can get that level of education within the home. So you have a real balance between, well, we're teaching health education because understanding health, hygiene, and yourself as a human being is important, and not having it step on maybe some toes of those who want to have their own opinions about sex education within their own home or gender questions within their own home. It's just a very fine balance. And I think, you know, we all know that it's a conversation that's changing every single year. You know, it's not a static situation. It's always moving. And we have to just be very responsive to it, careful with the conversations that are happening in the classrooms. And I think it can't be one teacher just going off on their own. The curriculum needs to be set and stuck. You know, that needs to be the plan that the teacher sticks to. So I kind of dodged right in the middle of that question.
Well, there's a lot of specifics there about, you know, when you get down to values. But I think most people would agree there is a set of values that are fairly universal that schools should be, bringing kids along with.
Mm-hmm.
You can probably squeeze in just one more question here. So how much time do you devote to being a school trustee? And do you think it's adequate? And then kind of a sideline on that, how many schools in our district have you visited in the past year? How does that work into your position?
So the role of the trustee, I mean, our official job is we have two meetings a month, the second Tuesday and the fourth Tuesday, and the public's invited to all of those. There's occasional executive sessions where we have a meeting either before or after or at a separate time to discuss issues that are not public. The fact that we have so many schools, it becomes very vital that the trustees each try and make it into the schools at least once throughout the year. And that is a goal I've had. I've obviously gotten into Kootenai and Sagal because they're the schools I represent, but I also try and make it to each of the high schools, try and go to some event so that I feel that I know who the principals are in those schools, who the staff is, and get a sense of the character of each school, because it is different. I think one thing that stuck with me when I first became a trustee is someone told me that you're never not a trustee in this community. So anything you say or do in the community, you should be representing the school district, and you should know that people will see you as a trustee. So I guess I would say you're a trustee 24/7, but as far as the meeting time, it's not, a major burden. And there's sometimes, I will tell you, when we were selecting a new superintendent, we were very heavily attending meetings, and there was a lot of time off when we weren't actively in meetings where we were reviewing information. So times like that, you really have to step up your commitment to the job.
And we're about out of time. We got about a minute here for you to give us a closing statement, Geraldine Lewis, candidate closing and statement. Incumbent for Zone 4 school trustee.
Sure. Well, obviously on November 5th, the voters have the say, but I'm hopeful that I will be able to serve another 4 years as trustee. It's one of those tasks. It's a civic responsibility that I don't take lightly. I really enjoy. I'm excited on where we're headed, excited to work with this administration, with our Superintendent Albertson, with Lisa Halls and Andrew Murray. I'm just excited for the direction it's heading. And I want to say I'm proud of this district. I'm proud of the level we've achieved here, the accomplishments academically. I'm proud of the fact that we have these 12 wonderful schools. And it's my hope to serve again for 4 years. So thank you.
Thank you, Geraldine Lewis, District 4 candidate for the Lake Pend Oreille School District incumbent. And with that,